Blog Talk Radio.
Less Detail, the podcast on a Wednesday night, February 5th, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. That was Super Bowl 48, and that was some shit. That was some bullshit. I mean, you talk about a team that just was not ready to play, just came out completely flat, had no answer for anything as the game went on. 43-8 is the final. Seahawks kill the Broncos, just leave Bronco dust all over the field. And wait, which team did I pick again? Oh. Yeah, that kind of explains everything, doesn't it? Jason, take it away.
Well, of course. Yeah, well, of course you had the Broncos. This is, you know, I think I had sent you a response to something you had written. I wasn't sure. I think I sent it to you in a text, though. I don't think I sent it on Twitter. Was that this is just the perfect end to your season, was to have the Broncos here and have them easily. This was going to be all Broncos all day, and it couldn't have been farther from what you had predicted. I thoroughly enjoyed the game. I think because for all the reasons that I stated when I picked the game last week, was I wanted to see the defense. I wanted to see that team be rewarded and kind of, you know, stick it to Goodell and all of the just Tecmo Bowl numbers that teams are putting up. And, you know, if you looked at just the box score, if you just looked at yardage, it wasn't as far apart as you'd think. And a lot of Seattle games tend to go that way. Denver wasn't even allowed to really play until the second half. And by then it was mop-up time, so they were getting a lot of empty yards, which made it look a lot closer than it really was. It was a blowout. It was a callback to our youths, back to the 80s when there was no such thing as a close Super Bowl. I think we've been spoiled over the last 10, 12 years here with all these last-second victory Super Bowls or coming down to the wire or a team needing to go for it at the goal line or on fourth down. And this year, nothing even close to that. Seattle wouldn't even let Denver in the game. I was surprised that Denver even showed up. Although, I mean, that was their bodies out there, but that was probably the most unprepared as I've seen a team for a big game in a very long time.
What was the biggest reason for that? What was that? It was the record setting offense. They broke all the records for yardage, for touchdowns. You know, number one defense in the game. I understand that, but What was the biggest reason for what happened?
It wasn't in the X's and O's. I think a lot of it comes down to, for Seattle, I think it's easier to prepare for a really good offensive team because they've played a lot of really good offensive teams. Denver didn't see anything like this all year long. I mean, guys weren't open. The guys who were open were getting jacked as soon as they were catching the ball. There was very little yak in this game for the Denver receivers. They couldn't run the ball. Anytime Peyton Manning checked into a run, it didn't go anywhere. And it seemed like anytime they were all obvious passing situations after a while, and Peyton Manning had guys at his feet, lunging at his arms, hitting his arms, just making him extremely uncomfortable. I don't think Denver was prepared for how fast Seattle is. I mean, they kept talking about how young that Seattle team is, which is scary. I mean, could this team get better? I mean, for a team that doesn't really throw out a ton of offense at you, I mean, if that team decided they wanted to really load up on offense and put some more playmakers out there with that defense, that's a really scary team.
So were you trying to say that Denver wasn't exactly prepared for that defense from the AFC competition throughout the year? Are you trying to say the AFC defense was a little bit weak compared to Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, look at the teams even here that Denver played in the playoffs. I mean, they went through New England. New England was battered in the secondary, in the linebacker core, and up. So all three levels of the defense, New England was not sharp all year long. And Tom Brady kind of willed that team to a lot more wins than we thought they deserved. And who's the other team that they beat? Was it San Diego? I mean, that's not exactly a juggernaut. You go through that schedule, you would say that the best defensive team that Denver played all year long was Kansas City, but Kansas City only looked great against also Rams. So I just don't think Denver was prepared. You could say Seattle had an easier time preparing because they had to play Seattle. They had to play New Orleans. They had to play San Francisco. They even had to play the shell of that Atlanta team that used to be explosive. But Seattle played good offensive teams, and they handled them pretty much all year long. Denver did not see this coming. I don't think there's any way that Denver could have been prepared for the speed and the intensity and just the total shutdown of everything they wanted to do. I don't think Denver could prepare. How do you prepare for that? Peyton Manning can't go practice against that because that Denver defense is a sieve.
Yeah, and even if it was a different defense that he had on his side to practice against, it's still not Seattle. It's Denver's a bad defense, but any other defense in the league, basically, except for a handful of them, is not going to replicate what Seattle can do. Those guys are long-armed, long-limbed, extraterrestrial freaks just up and down the roster. And they're not first-rounders either. They're a bunch of third- and fifth-round guys that Pete Carroll just assembled and put together like like Frankenstein in the lab creating a monster. It's unbelievable. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's no way that Denver and Peyton Manning could have been properly prepared to dissect them the way at least the way that I predicted that they would. There's still really not much of an excuse for them to be that unprepared. How do you practice for 2 weeks for the biggest game of your life and you don't know when you get out there for your first snap, if you're the center, Manny Ramirez, you don't know that Peyton Manning's going to step up to the line, look at the defense, and then step back up and try to audible and call the correct play, get them in the correct way. It's like he had no idea that Peyton Manning does that. It's like the first time he ever played center for the Denver Broncos or something. I don't understand how you pull that stunt.
Well, and it was a total domination. At no point, no matter how small or how big the Seattle lead was, you never got that feeling that Denver was ever going to get anything going, that they were ever going to chain together some first downs. They weren't getting anything as far as big plays. So the few offensive drives that Denver put together, it was converting a lot of third downs. And the way that Seattle was turning the ball over, getting points on the board, big plays, chunks of yardage, I mean, in the running game, in the passing game, and in the special teams, Seattle was ripping off just huge plays, just chunks of yardage against that horrible defense of the Denver Broncos. And every time the Denver Broncos had the ball on offense, it was painful to watch because you were wondering how these two teams were even in the Super Bowl. That's why it felt like the 80s all over again. One team could do anything it wanted on offense, defense, or special teams. The other team had to work so hard just to get a first down. It was painful. It was very painful. I felt bad for the Broncos, but I was loving watching that defense. I could watch Seattle play defense all game long, which was what made that game two weeks before, against San Francisco, that much more fun to watch. That probably was the Super Bowl, really, when you think about it.
Who would have thunk that? I mean, it was an awesome game, but Like I said, when the matchup was made, when it was clear that it was going to be Seattle against Denver, this is the best you could hope for. This is the big Super Bowl. This is the number one offense and the number one defense. You can't get a better matchup than this. And as it turned out, the Seattle-San Francisco game would have made a much better Super Bowl. Again, it's hard to imagine how you could come out that seemingly unprepared, thrown off by the snap to start the game. Maybe it's as simple as that. Maybe it's just that one play to start thing. When you find yourself trailing in the Super Bowl after 12 fucking seconds, I think that can throw any team off of whatever game plan they came up with. As Mike Tyson always says, every man's got a plan when he steps in the ring till he gets punched. And Denver got punched 12 seconds in. Obviously, they never recovered. I don't know how they really could have with the defense they were playing. If you're going to play a defense that awesome and you're going to give them 2 points without them having to do anything. Seattle didn't make Manny Ramirez snap the ball past Peyton Manning's head. Manny Ramirez did that on his own, you know, almost as if he was on the take or something. But when you're going to start off the game that badly, there's pretty much no worse way you could have started off. The only thing the worst that could have happened is if Denver didn't jump on the ball in the end zone and Seattle has a 7-0 lead 18 seconds in or 12 seconds in instead of a 2-point lead. That's about the only way it could have been worse.
Yeah, they broke the record for the fastest touchdown in a Super Bowl. That was previously held by the Devin Hester kickoff return for a touchdown against the Colts. But speaking of, I mean, you have the Colts-Bears Super Bowl. Nice little analogy here. As you go out, you kick the ball to the guy you had no business kicking to. Hester runs the ball all the way back for the touchdown, and all of a sudden the Colts are down 7-0. You know what? They learned and they adapted, and hey, we're not going to kick the ball to that guy anymore. That was a very easy to spot problem, easily fixable. Seattle had no easily fixed problems for Denver to identify, other than, you know, snap the ball straight to Peyton Manning. Okay, you can fix that.
Right, Manny Ramirez fixed that problem.
No, he didn't snap the ball over his head anymore for the rest of the game, so they fixed that problem. The other problem was that once Seattle got the ball down 5-0, then down 8-0, 15-0, 22-0, 29, 30, it's just this snowball. And that's also going to help.
Peyton Manning could adjust and get everything, rearranged and figure out what he's doing when you got Reggie Wayne running wide open with nobody covering him. That's real easy to get your ball bearings back when you see that. Not so much against Seattle. They weren't letting anybody run free. It was just a bludgeoning from start to finish. Russell Wilson, I'll give him his props in this respect. Those third down conversions were all 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. There was no reading of the defenses. There was no checking down to the second, third, or fourth options. He's still not very good in the pocket. But what they did, what Daryl Bevel and the Seahawks offensive coaches did, was they made sure that he's going to have one guy that's going to make his quick cut, his slant pattern, and hopefully find a small window to get open on third down. And when he does that, it's up to you, Russell Wilson, to throw that ball as hard as you can into that little window. Hopefully the guy holds onto the ball and we can convert for the first down. And that's exactly what they did over and over again. So Russell Wilson gets the credit for that. He has the rocket arm. He's got the baseball arm. He put it to great use. Denver, their defense needs to figure out what was going on there, because that was a pattern that was easy to spot, you know, sitting at home with no football coaching experience. I'm sure the Denver coaches spotted the pattern as well of he's going to his first read on a slant pattern and he's throwing it as hard as he can. Someone needs to get in front of the ball and do something with it, either knock it down or pick it off. But they never seemed to be able to do that. And then from there, it was a lot easier for Russell Wilson to loosen up and start playing like the more poised quarterback of the two, which I never in a million years would have thought would have happened.
Yeah, I honestly don't think if you would have taken a poll of people and told them before the game the final of this game is going to be 43-8, I don't think you would have had a lot of takers in that poll for Seattle outside of the Pacific Northwest. I think you would have had a lot of people figure, oh, it's just going to be a Peyton Manning romp. He's going to throw 5 touchdowns, and that Seattle offense is never going to get a chance, and their defense is overrated, and they're going to be exposed, and Sherman nothing but a big talker, and he's going to get his comeuppance. Not most people, I don't think, would have seen this going 43-8. Towards Seattle. But I loved watching it. As lopsided as it was something to watch. I mean, it'll be interesting for you to go back and watch it next year. to see, because even watching it live as it happened, you know, and the one thing I was left that I took away from that was, if you're the Broncos, what game plan could you have come up with to win that game?
I'm not sure. What they obviously came up with was, let's try to defeat them at the line of scrimmage. In this respect, we're going to quick snap it. We're going to use silent counts. We're not going to go with the Omaha bullshit because no one's going to be able to hear us because we're on the road, essentially, even though Seattle's also on the road. They brought enough of their fans to make it loud and make it uncomfortable. That's why the whole snap over Peyton's head happened, was because Manny Ramirez wasn't used to having to deal with silent counts and snap counts and all of that. Playing their first two playoff games at home, they didn't have to worry about that. They could just do the Omaha stuff and make it simple. So that's right off the bat. They tried that. That obviously didn't work on the very first play. And after that, it was pretty much just a systematic breakdown of whatever receiver could possibly get open against the back seven. He didn't have much room to do anything once the ball was in the area. Either the ball got knocked away or he caught it and turned around and got a helmet into his ear hole from Cam Chancellor or Earl Thomas or somebody else. That's really difficult to game plan against. I don't want to say impossible because Seattle didn't go undefeated, so somebody figured out a way to play against them. But on this day, with this one game, no excuses. The Denver Broncos just couldn't figure out how to do it.
Yeah, I pointed out a couple of things in the recap for the Super Bowl here that the Broncos completely unprepared. I laid this more at the coaching staff. I'm not the Peyton Manning apologist. You know, there's a lot of those out there. That's not for me. He didn't have it, but nobody had it. I don't think anybody had it. I don't think anybody that you could have put out under center had much more to go than he had. That whole offensive line, everything just collapsed around him. I almost wondered, it's on the blog in the recap, I almost wondered if their game plan was to just more make him uncomfortable, because they could have clearly gotten to him and put him on the turf. They could have sacked him many times, but it seemed like a lot more of it was reaching for his arm, getting around his legs, trying to force him into some of those so-called ducks, as they were. And on both interceptions, that wasn't really a case of, you know, Peyton Manning just throwing the ball to the other team. He didn't do a full-on, like, Kaepernick and just throw the ball to a guy. He just didn't see him. I mean, both of those were – his arm was hit, which is very painful, I might tell you. When you're throwing a football, somebody hits your arm in your follow-through, that hurts like hell. And he doesn't have the greatest arm strength in the world, but both of those interceptions were just – slapped at his arm, and that ball just floated, you know, right to the defender for easy picks. I mean, they weren't even difficult plays that those guys had to make on both of those interceptions. I don't think they were coached up very well at all for this game. They were not prepared for the moment.
Yeah, you're right. The interception to Cam Chancellor Peyton had bad mechanics because of all the trash around his feet and all the pressure being put on him and people swatting at his arm and swatting at the ball. Obviously, the pick six to Malcolm Smith was complete arm, you know, getting deflected by Cliff Averill and impeding the pass and making it pop straight up in the air. Yeah, it was just an assault on Peyton Manning from the get-go, which is exactly the way to beat Peyton Manning, but I didn't think Seattle would be successful at getting to him because Denver had done so well at protecting Peyton Manning in the first two playoff games, but again, I failed to take into account that those games were at home where they didn't have to deal with too much road pressure and road noise and things of that nature. It's so much more difficult to play against a good defense when you're not at home. And this was not just a good defense, but the best defense in football. And it was not just on the road. It was in the Super Bowl with all the pressures that go with that. So it kind of seemed doomed from the start, which is easy for me to say now that the game's over and my pick of Denver looks so terrible on paper now.
Well, I don't want to pat myself too much on the back here, but I do have to take a little credit for nailing another X Factor. I seem to have gotten streaky at times with X Factors. It's like when I get them big, and when I miss them, the guy doesn't even show up on the box score. You had, of course, the Denver kick punt returner, Trindon Holliday, and Denver was returning a lot of kicks. He didn't do much. I, on the other side, had Percy Harvin. 137 all-purpose yards in the game, did not touch the ball but four times, definitely made his presence felt. But he's going to be – he's that kind of boom-or-bust guy for Seattle because he hardly ever plays, but, boy, he sure picked a hell of a game to show up in.
He was the fastest guy on the field, again, which he seems to be every time he plays. And Denver obviously had no answer for him. It's like they didn't – practice to stop him at all. Maybe they just assumed that he would trip on the sprinkler on his way out to the field and wouldn't be able to play in the game or something. But yeah, he was awesome. That's the start to the second half with the kick return for a touchdown. So you start the game snapping the ball over your quarterback's head and giving 2 points to Seattle. You start the second half giving up a kickoff return for a touchdown. Here's 7 more points. Denver gave Seattle so many points. Seattle took their fair share of points. You know, Russell Wilson had a couple of big throws once he got comfortable and you know, realized that he was going to win the game so he could really relax and just let it go. But Denver did their share to give Seattle some true gifts, just wrapped up with a pretty little bow. Here's some points. Here's a kick return. Here's just the craziest ways. Here's a pick six. There's just a ball popping up in the air, just another gift. Denver basically played about as bad a game as you could possibly play.
So it's a minor thing overall. But if you're the Broncos, and I know you came out and gave up the kickoff for the touchdown to start the second half. I mean, you never know what's going to happen once you start a chain of events in motion. Did you have the problem that I had with Denver not just kicking the field goal and taking a few points right before halftime? And all ready to start going for it on fourth down, the end of the second quarter. Did you have any problems with that? Because I had a big problem with that with the crowd of people that we had watching the game. I thought they were making a huge mistake not just taking the three.
At that point of the game, I actually did not really have a problem with it because you're already at, you know, DEFCON 5. It's already at the point that, you know, what's 22-3 going to do for you? That you kind of have to, if you want to have a chance at it in the second half, you kind of have to go for it. If you're Jacksonville and you don't, you know, have a care in the world and you're not very good anyway, yeah, then you take the 3 points as a moral victory, something to build on, to build you up in the locker room at halftime, but you don't actually think you're going to come back and win the game. Denver still thought they were going to win the game, but that's how you do it. You have to take 7 when you're in the red zone like that. You can't settle for 3 in any way, shape, or form, which is what Seattle did their first couple of possessions, which I thought was going to come back and bite them once Peyton Manning got comfortable and settled in, which, of course, never happened. But at that point, I will admit that I was surprised to see them come out on fourth down and go for it. But I actually liked the call. I figure if you're the number one offense of all fucking time, then you take this moment and this opportunity to say, this is our stand. We have played like complete shit up to this point, and we will now start playing Denver Bronco football and Peyton Manning football, and we will now start doing what we're supposed to do, which is putting the ball in the end zone, which I did 55 times by my damn self this season, and we will start taking what we rightfully deserve from the Seattle Seahawks, regardless of where they rank in, as far as their defense goes. And Seattle just punched them right back and said, no, no, you're not.
So, and of course, again, I mean, this is all, I mean, of course, it's a recap show, so it's all hindsight. Does this make you think differently of that Denver core of wide receivers? That are they really as good as we think they are? Because you had Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, Wes Welker, and Julius Thomas, and other than Demaryius Thomas, most of those guys were just disappeared for that whole game. Are they missing just a burner? Are they missing a playmaker? Or is that team built to Peyton Manning and his lack of arm strength and guys just running crossing routes over the middle and, staying close to the line of scrimmage and doing something with the ball after the catch? Because they didn't look like they could get away from anybody.
Yeah, you got it. That's exactly what they're built for. They're built for the crossing patterns and the little – ticky-tack plays, get the little 5-yard curl route and then take it upfield as quick as you can. Demaryius Thomas is supposed to be the burner of the team. I think that's fine. I think you can get away with him being the fastest guy on the team. Again, this is a record-setting offense, so, hard to criticize. But I think with Peyton Manning as the quarterback, Peyton Manning is the reason Eric Decker has any value at all. He's really nothing. Wes Welker is not what he used to be. He was still very productive this season, but we're not talking about a great receiver there either. He's in his 30s now. Julius Thomas is completely off the street. I think that team is completely built around Peyton Manning. I think that the core of receivers is as good as they are because of Peyton Manning. I don't think Eric Decker, I don't know if he'd be in the league if he had another quarterback, if his quarterback was, Jeff Toole. And Wes Welker might be on his way out as well. I don't know if they really need to overhaul the wide receiver core. I think they're built exactly the way they're supposed to be. I don't know what else they could have done as far as this particular Super Bowl. They had as great a season as they could hope to have. They just ran into a complete buzzsaw at Super Bowl 48. I don't know if there's anything they could have done to change that.
No, it's you and I definitely, we didn't see it the same way going in, but I definitely say we see it the same way coming out. There was no hope. There was no chance. It was like watching a funeral. It had about the drama of a funeral, because at the end of the funeral, still dead. I mean, as good as Seattle was, the story wasn't how good Seattle was as much as how inept they made Denver look. That's really what I took away. So it's still about Seattle, but not Seattle looking awesome. Seattle making Denver look just useless and inept and old and slow and just not ready for a team like the Seahawks. So they are the best team in the league. Congratulations to them.
Absolutely. And the story is also that once the referees decided that they weren't going to be the story, they were going to let them play, that was pretty much the end of it as well, because once you let Seattle get away with any kind of little clutching, grabbing, and the hits that they made were legal as well, when they got a chance in the open field, they put as much pain as you could put on somebody without actually getting penalized and getting in any kind of trouble, which was also very impressive. More football talk. We'll talk about the odds and the prop bets on the other side of this break. All right, now into our after-show portion of our program. And you, did you keep up with those prop bets that you had?
I did. I'm glad I don't bet. Let's just say that. I wouldn't have won much money. The only one that I wasn't able to get a confirmed did I win or did I not win, the bet was about the Seattle defense where they mentioned more than the Denver offense. I wasn't able to get an exact was that a winning bet or not. All the other ones, nope. Lost them all except for the over. I did have the over 75.5 yards for the sum total of all touchdowns scored in the game.
Yeah, and I thought that was going to be an easy one
too. Yeah, when you have a 70-yard pick six and an 87-yard kickoff return for a touchdown, and they did not specify that this had to be offensive plays, just said combined total of all touchdowns, that was an easy one because the total ended up coming in somewhere in the 160s, 170s. So that one was way over. Denver did not even attempt a field goal, so I had no chance of both teams kicking greater than a 33-yard field goal. No chance at all. Percy Harvin did not get hurt. So even though I had Percy as my X factor, was not able to capitalize, and of course Marshawn Lynch did not run indeed for 200 yards. Marshawn Lynch wasn't even the leading rusher on his own team. Percy Harvin was the leading rusher for the Seattle Seahawks on the day. Thing you pointed out though with the defense there and the officials, and this also goes back to coaching, Seattle, who you thought would be young and undisciplined, They knew what they could get away with, and you know it was surprising for a team that had no Super Bowl experience, never had played in a moment like this before, that you didn't see cheap shots or late hits or taunting. Even as they were running away with this game, you never really saw the ugly side of a young team come out. Really impressed with that team, you know, Pete Carroll, the coaches, Russell Wilson. That defense, absolutely everything about Seattle left me impressed. Made me sad I didn't pick them before the season started.
Absolutely, very impressive. I echo that completely. Pete Carroll, a hell of a coaching job. I would have never considered taking them because all this time I thought that they were doing San Francisco light. That's what I've always called them. I thought they were just simply kind of ripping off the template that Jim Harbaugh had set for the 49ers when he came in, which is, you know, hard-nosed, tough defense, and piece it together on offense with an athletic wild card back there at quarterback, sort of playing the game different than the way everyone else plays it. I thought Seattle kind of sort of ripped them off in that little template. But Seattle is obviously doing it a lot better than San Francisco is doing it, and there's no way that anyone could have thought that was going to happen. When you got the, you know, high draft pick studs on defense like San Francisco has with Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman and all those guys back there, who would have thought that Seattle would have came in with their bunch of reprobates and guys you never heard of almost off the street they were drafted so low and put together the winning game plan? It's unbelievable what they did when you really think about it. And all props go to them. And, yeah, as young as they are, it's kind of scary. Who knows? They can do this again next year, and it wouldn't surprise anybody at all.
Well, you know, and it's funny because we bring up San Francisco. You know, there are two teams in the same division, so they face each other a lot. And a lot of times you get that team that does something hot, and then the other team tries to emulate it and copy it. But I will say for Seattle, what really makes them interesting and different than San Francisco is that Seattle achieves all of their success, in my opinion, on defense from their two main corners and their two safeties. I don't think they have the most talented linebacker core. I don't think they have the most talented front line. So they're getting it all by being able to play man up with Sherman and Maxwell, and then having Chancellor and Earl Thomas to just crush anybody who goes anywhere in their vicinity, so they can stuff the run with their safeties, and they'll lay the wood on you. Where San Francisco's doing it all with Bowman and Willis and Alden Smith and all these guys up in the front seven, so they're doing it through pressure. Where it's sort of the reverse with Seattle, where Seattle gets its pressure by being able to stick guys for a really ridiculous long period of time that you just, it's almost inhuman how long they can, their defense can extend plays. And I think overall they're built for more of the modern NFL than San Francisco is. That's why San Francisco, you can score a lot of points on the 49ers if you can get into that secondary. You can't get into that Seattle secondary. You just can't. It's not an easy thing to do. They're not perfect. I mean, they're not going to go 16-0. I mean, everybody has their up days and their down days. But damn, they looked good.
Yeah, you almost get the feeling that they can stretch their arms across the field, or whoever's in the secondary, whether it's the four or whether they add a nickel back, that they can stretch their arms and their fingers across and touch each other's fingers. They just cover everything on that field. Everything is covered. Everywhere you throw, it seems like someone's there to deflect it away. They are just incredible, the way they cover things and the way that they allow the front four to work and try to affect the game up front without any blitzing, without any extra guys trying to help them. Like you said, it's not the greatest defensive line across, but they're very talented as well. It's fun to watch Cliff Avril come off the corner. He should have never left Detroit. He was very good at his job with the Lions, but they let him go. It's fun to watch Red Bryant get around the corner and stuff the run. It's fun to watch those guys up front do what they do without any help, because you know that they're not going to have people coming and helping them out because the other seven are back just waiting for anybody to throw so they can make plays back there. But those long arms are there. It's a different way of playing defense. It's extremely effective. And the funniest thing might be to see how many guys try to emulate that, how many teams now might try to go into the draft and we got the 17th pick. We could get this stud wide receiver from Texas. We could get this quarterback that looks like he's got the goods, might have all the tools. No, I think I want to go for that 6'4" cornerback down in Miami or something that nobody would take a look at normally, but I think that might be the new way to do it, is to get some long-armed extraterrestrial robot and put him back there and let him just destroy all the wide receivers and beat them down and be physical. And, you know, the key, of course, is going to be to get guys that are disciplined enough to do that without drawing penalties and hurting the team. So we'll see how that game plan works out. But I got a feeling a lot of guys are going to kind of take a cue and try to emulate what the Seahawks are doing.
Well, yeah, it's a copycat league, you know, and you had a couple of years where it seemed like the way to win the Super Bowl or the path to it was to just try to go out and outscore everybody. If you can stop somebody, you don't need the world-class offense. If you can go out and just put the brakes on the other team, flip the field position, don't just try to go down the field back and forth, up and down all day where it's just, you know, score and then kick off back and forth. You can turn the ball over. You can turn them over, or you can make them punt. Oh, my God. You know, you can actually do something to affect the other team, get them out of rhythm. So, you know, maybe you start to see that switch back the other way. You know, we had that one with the Ravens when they won their first Super Bowl. And then you had a lot of defensive teams winning the Super Bowl. And then for a while, right, kind of got away from that. And yeah, started to see some teams with offense start really trying to make the gains. But that underlying theme, even while we were going through all of this offense, the underlying theme was usually the team with the better defense still won the Super Bowl. Even in the matchup, the team with the better defense usually prevailed in the Super Bowl.
Oh yeah, I heard that a lot in the last 2 weeks, and that just made me more resolute in my pick, because I just kept saying, this isn't that time anymore. That was the old time when you could knock the snot out of people and leave blood on the field and horrify all the little kids watching your Super Bowl, and Roger Goodell won't let that happen anymore. They're going to call it tight. They're going to make sure that that kind of stuff, that kind of horseplay and funny business doesn't go on. And, of course, that's not how it went. But I still want to go on the record as saying that I think that the way to win a Super Bowl is not necessarily going to be the best defense beating the best offense. I still think you just happen to get the right refereeing crew that decides to call when the defense is holding on to the receiver 10 yards downfield that actually throws the flag. I still think the best offense can win the Super Bowl in this day and age. There's so many rules now on the books that allow you to flag the defense for that type of stuff if you want to do it. This referee crew didn't want to do it. Okay, fine. And it was a blowout. I still am on the record thinking that there's a certain referee crew out there that will call the letter of the rules. And when you do that, it's really hard to succeed as a defense, because if you can't ride a guy downfield like that, they can basically run and do anything they want, and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, the play that really stuck out to me when I pointed this out in the blog too was second offensive drive for the Broncos. You know, Cam Chancellor just lit up one of the Broncos receivers going over the middle. Lit him up completely.
Yep.
The guy had caught the ball. He jacked him up. That was like the good old-fashioned, you know, jacked up type play.
Yep.
Completely legal, didn't hit him illegally, hit him with his shoulder, didn't hit him in the head. Everything about it was legal, and I completely expected it to be flagged because of just the pussy nature that the NFL has gone to, where if anything happened violently, the guy's head snaps, even though he wasn't hit in the head, or a guy who's quote-unquote defenseless, even though he just caught the ball, gets knocked to the turf too hard, the flag comes out. And when that didn't get flagged, I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And for the whole game, it was, you know, it wasn't like Seattle was just given calls. They weren't handed this game by the officials, but the officials clearly decided we are not going to be the deciding factor in this game. But I don't know how many whistles would it have taken for Denver to even be in this game, because they lost by 5 touchdowns.
It only takes a few. It only takes a handful for, oh, illegal contact again. Oh, shit. Okay, now we got to back off. Now we can't play man coverage, you know, press man. We got to give them a little space at least, because obviously if we still are making contact with them 6 yards downfield, here comes a flag. That affects the entire game. It doesn't take very much, but like you said, the referees didn't want to be the story this time, and I don't blame them, and as a result, Denver really had no chance. We got a couple minutes left here.
I'm good with that because I called it that way. I'm good with that because I predicted that would happen. So you can be not okay with it because you predicted, of course, the other thing would happen. But I'm completely okay with it because, I mean, I didn't see it going this way. I didn't see it going this far towards Seattle. But, you know, if I'm going to be on the right side of it, at least I can be correct about the manner that it happened. I didn't have the balls to call this one a 5 touchdown Seattle win, so I can't take all the credit for that.
Yeah, it's not that I'm not okay with the outcome. I'm pissed because I got it wrong, but I'm just saying a different refereeing crew, it might have been a different result. So we are going to take a break as far as doing shows. We will be back. Who knows when? We're not going to really be on a set schedule. There's only one show that we're scheduled to do, and that's going to be the last Saturday of it's actually not the last Saturday of February. It's the first Saturday in March, technically March the 1st, because we're going to have our friend Dave on, who's a big movie buff. You're a movie buff too, Jason. Going to do a little Oscar preview show. And then after that, we'll have baseball shows and maybe a WrestleMania preview show. Who knows? We'll definitely talk about some college basketball, the March Madness, maybe something going with the NFL draft. Who knows? We'll have a whole lot of things we could possibly do in the future. You just never know. So we are out of here.